Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to A Time for Justice. I am your host, Sister Pamela Muhammad, and I welcome you to the show, A Time for Justice. As you know, this show is on the Elevated Places Network, and we are so happy that you all have joined us tonight. This show discusses legal and current events in a roundtable discussion of legal minds. We discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice, and the negative impacts these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing. We want justice under the law. But all too often, this is not the actions we see. Our guest tonight will not make those excuses for racist conduct, often seen, which are really just distractions from the truth, which is the path to justice and equal protection. So let's talk about just, fair, and equitable solutions, which are really in the best interests of the people. Let's remove the distractions. So I would like to thank you all once again. My name is Sister Pamela Muhammad, and this is the Elevated Places Network presenting A Time for Justice. We have a really great show tonight. I'm very excited about the show because we're going to deal with one of our favorite areas of the law, and that is the part of music. We all love music. We love and recognize the beauty and the artistry of fine music. And so we're going to have tonight some attorneys who are working in the music industry, who work in the field. And tonight, our topic is the impact of music on social movements. So we're going to have some fun tonight because we're going to talk about some oldies and some goodies and when music was really about impacting social movements. And, of course, we were brought to this topic partly because of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's beautiful, beautiful address to us with the Swan Song. And after I bring on the guests, we're going to talk about his words on this issue particularly. But let me go ahead and open up the mic for these brothers, the attorneys. So we have Brother Warren Fitzgerald Muhammad. As you know, Brother Warren is a graduate of Texas Southern University's Thurgood Marshall School of Law. Brother Attorney Warren has maintained an extensive practice in the field of entertainment law, as well as being an attorney for two of the original members of Destiny's Child, which were LaToya Luckett and Latavia Robertson. Brother Warren has sued their former manager, Matthew Knowles, he Music World Management, Sony, and pretty much that case, he ended up negotiating a settlement. I'm going to go ahead and open up Brother Warren's mic because I want him later on to talk to us and share with us some of the things he's done in his practice with entertainment. So let me go ahead and open up Brother Warren's mic. I'm so excited. Move this over here, Brother Warren. Brother Warren.
As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, Brother Warren. Thank you so much for joining us, Time for Justice.
Yes, ma'am. The pleasure and honor is mine, Sister Pam. It's always a pleasure to be on your show and look forward to a lively discussion this evening.
Yes, sir. All praises are due to Allah. Thank you. And next, we want to open up the mic and introduce our brother, Brother Colin Muhammad. And Brother Colin Muhammad is a graduate of the New York Law School in 1994. He has worked on Wall Street for 33 years. He's a co-founder of a music production company. He's a member of Black Entertainment and Sports Law Association, and he lists that he's been a guest speaker at colleges on the business of entertainment. So, Brother Attorney Colin Muhammad, Brother Colin, let me open up your mic and greet you as well, sir.
As-salamu alaykum, Queen.
Wa alaykum salam, Brother Colin. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Thank you by the grace of Allah.
Yes, sir. Praises be to Allah. Brother Colin, if your volume can come up a bit, that might give us a little bit more volume. Yes, sir. Brother Colin.
Can you hear me back?
I can. I wanted to say something like, you know, mic check, and know what they say. But anyway, welcome to A Time for Justice. As we talk about the impact and influence of music on social movements, and I can't, you know, I can think of no other way to start this show as to talk about the minister's words in the Swan Song. And the minister, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, in the Swan Song, which was the February 27th Savior's Day address, and you can actually get this in this week's final call, the minister talks about how my songs were transformed from a nasty calypso or a stupid ballad into songs of the cause that bring about resurrection. And as he goes on, he talks about how, you know, he gave up, you know, being in entertainment to serve the mission of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and, you know, Master Farah Muhammad in raising and resurrecting the dead. And so he's, you know, left being an entertainer, but we know he definitely has impacted the world as the person that he is, the Messiah in our midst. But, you know, in this article, the minister also talks about how he wrote songs for black people. And so he talked about an instance where, you know, there was some money being offered, and he, you know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad asked him, did he want to take the money versus, you know, the masters. They were trying to buy his masters. And I think that was for A White Man's Heaven. If I'm not mistaken. And the minister, you know, responded that, again, the music was for the people. And so finally the minister gives the example how Muhammad Ali was hip to the teachings when he was approached by Brother Sam or Brother Rahman, I believe, a time he had an interchange with Muhammad Ali, and Muhammad Ali knew some of the quotes from A White Man's Heaven. And, you know, the minister went on to point out how when he said, why are we called Negroes? Why are we deaf, dumb, and blind? Why is everybody making progress and we seem to be lagging so far behind? And the minister's quote, and The Rock said, hey, man, you hip to the teachings? How did he get hip to the teachings is the question. And it was a sound by Louis Farrakhan. So we are here tonight because we understand the importance of sounds. We understand the importance of music. So I want to go right into our guest. And I'm going to start with Brother Warren because I brought him on first. And I just kind of want you to open up and talk to us about how you came to like working with music, some of the work you've done in this area, how you feel you've helped the community or are helping the community in this area of music and entertainment. So, Brother Warren, would you mind starting, please?
Yes, ma'am. I grew up around music. To be honest, I can remember my parents owned a cafe right in the heart of Acres Homes. I don't know what they'd call it. We called it a cafe then, a bar, but they didn't serve liquor by the drink. They serve beer and setups and food, short order food, hamburgers, chicken, fish sandwiches, fish dinners, all of that kind of thing, barbecue. But they always had a jukebox in the club. And I can remember being a little baby standing next to the jukebox, listening to the music with my ear next to the jukebox. So it's like music was just bred into me from a baby. Mm-hmm. They opened the cafe the year I was born. So I literally was raised in the cafe.
From the time I was born
until the time I graduated from college, I was in that cafe. So when I went to law school, I had heard of something called an entertainment lawyer. I really didn't know what they did. I just knew they were connected to entertainment and music. And when I went to law school, one of my goals was to become an entertainment lawyer. And the counselors and the teachers in the law school would ask me as I matriculated through law school, what did I want to do with my career? And I would say, I want to be an entertainment lawyer. And they would laugh and say, what is that?
Yes, sir.
And there were no classes, no courses on it. I just had this idea. And I finished law school, set up my practice, and did the routine things. I handled criminal cases, divorces, accident cases, you name it. But I would go to the live entertainment club scene in Houston. I would go and I would introduce myself to the members of the bands in the clubs and give them my card and tell them I was an entertainment lawyer. And if they were in the business, they needed an entertainment lawyer. And that's how I got started, just off the rip. And I started.
Yes.
I met a music producer. And I started spending the night in the recording studio watching him work and learn the music business really from the ground up in terms of how to actually make music. And back then, there was no digital anything. Everything was done through analog. I'm sure Brother Colin will be familiar with this. But everything was analog, and all the recordings were done on 2.5-inch tapes called master tapes. And it was a real tedious process. But that's where I cut my teeth, working with artists in the studios and then started helping them to set up their companies, copyrighting their music, doing deals, production deals, and artist deals. And I learned it really organically. And I joined the organization you mentioned, BESLA, Black Entertainment and Sports Lawyers Association. I attended the inaugural meeting of BESLA in 1979, just after walking out of law school, and I was not a founder, but I was among the first members of that organization, and I made relationships with experienced entertainment lawyers from New York and Detroit and California, and they mentored me in attending those conferences, taking the continued education courses that they offered and just learning how to read contracts. And that's how I learned the business, actually, through those mentorships and through BESLA. So I'm forever beholden to them. And then just hitting the streets in Houston,
yes,
working with artists and learning from the ground up. That's kind of how it started for me.
Beautiful. Thank you. Brother Colin, what about you? You want to give us your story. How did you get into this area of law?
Wow. Well, I've always had a love of music, right, my whole life. Whether I was listening to music for 10 hours in the basement of my house as a youngster, I would sit in the basement and just play music for 10 straight hours, or I was taking piano lessons from high school, even to this day, right? So I've always had a love of music. But it's when I went to law school, like Brother Warren, I said I want to be an entertainment attorney. And my entry into law school coincides with my entry into the nation, right? I started law school August of 1990. I accepted the teaching, I want to say, wow, maybe in July of 1990. And I got my ex during the break between the fall semester and the spring semester. And while in law school, we had an entertainment law class that I took. And we had a Jewish lawyer, older Jewish lawyer, who I have the utmost respect for because he told all the black students in that class the truth. And he told us to make a fist as hard as you can. Squeeze your hand as hard as you can. He said, take a finger on your other hand and try and squeeze into the fist. Just press as hard as you can. And he said, how far can you go? And we say, not far. He said, that's your chances as a black lawyer in the entertainment field. Because most of the lawyers are white. And he said that the black artists are hiring white attorneys. And the white artists are not hiring black attorneys, so you really don't have a chance. And that was his honest assessment. And where a lot of people got turned off, it didn't turn me off. I said, well, you know, that's their reality. It ain't my reality. You know, I'm gonna keep pushing. And, you know, I met a brother in Lamont who turned out to be my partner 25 years in this. You know, he had artists where he was managing rappers, and I represented them in different negotiations and so forth. And then one thing led to another, and we started our own company. And 25 years later, you know, I'm at where I'm at now. And I would tell you, like I tell anybody else, you know, a lot of people could tell you what you can and can't do, especially in this industry. But I tell you, don't listen to them. If it's something that you really desire to do, there's more than enough information out there for you to study up on that you can get a piece of this vast pie. And I'm going to say vast pie because there's so much to do in this industry today that we as black people definitely get involved in. But we can say that for later on down the show. But that's basically how I got into the industry.
Yes, sir. That's beautiful, getting a piece of that pie. And you know what? We have some callers already lined up. But I wanted to put my two cents in because what I'm thinking about were movements. You know, it's like when did I fall in love with music? And it was really, it has a lot to do with the time period I was born in, because I was born in the 60s, and this is when songs such as Moving On Up, you know, A Change Is Gonna Come, Bob Dylan in 1962 did Blowing in the Wind, Sam Cooke did A Change Is Gonna Come in 1964, because again, our topic is about making those changes, making the impacts. And so then we have people like the Staple Singers. I found out some very interesting information about how impactful they were. You know, we know Curtis Mayfield and the Dramatics the Impressions were, again, in the 60s with these hits, these You're a Winner. And then we have Don Cornelius coming out of Brownsville, Chicago in 1966. So this was the time period that I was born in, and the influence of pride and family and just love of music is something that really was embedded in me. And then what happened next is I think the next time I had such a movement-oriented mindset is when Ice Cube, you know, was in the nation initially in the early 90s, and I would be on my way to court, Brother Warren, and, you know, here down here in Houston, and I'd be listening to his CDs, and, you know, it would just make me angry because I was dealing with injustice. I said, yeah, that's right. You know, and then Public Enemy, I came out of law school, and like, wow, we've never heard anything like this before. So this, again, the topic is the music and the ability to influence movements and make impacts. So I know I have some really special guests. I think one of Brother Warren's clients is on. So I'm going to open up the mic earlier, and then we can come back, because I really want to hear you talk too, Brother Colin, about how that money is out there. You know, because there's this thought that if you don't, like, sell out, if you don't have content that is helping black people, that the money is not there. And this is something that we really want to disabuse our audience of tonight, because we need positive music. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the mic, if that's okay with you all, and bring on this brother. Let's see, Brother Dorian Paul. Brother Dorian? Yes, sir.
Good evening.
Assalamu alaikum. Good evening to you, sir. Welcome.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir. Yes, sir. Did you have a question or a comment?
Well, actually, I'm just kind of excited about the content of the conversation for or the session, if we will, for this evening, talking about the number one community, and then talking about positive influence when it came down to music. Brother Warren was extremely influential in my early career. I am actually from Houston, born and raised, born in the Nickel, the Fifth Ward, and raised in Trinity Garden. Went to Cashmere High School, and I was under the tutorage of Conrad Johnson. The initial impact of the positivity of Conrad Johnson influencing me, I will never forget. In the 10th grade, me and one of the musicians were kind of arguing about the music and things of that nature, and he just pretty much made us look like real idiots and said, why in the world would you even be arguing about somebody else's music? You could never have a career with someone else's. Write and speak your own thoughts. Mm. You need to be concerned about your own concerns and write your own songs. And at that point, I was 13 going into 14, and I've been writing ever since. I have a 16-year tenure with Charlie Wilson and the Gap Band, and wrote several songs, produced several songs with them, and had production with other artists in the we call that pretty much the funk era. But I am truly privy to you and the foundation being the Temptations, the Jackson 5, the Isley Brothers early, Marvin Gaye, Al Green. Those were artists to me that I had extreme fascination of their every pretty much attribute that they had, which was songwriting ability, stage presence, performance etiquette, just all of those things that to me is a very lacking situation of the artist today.
Yes,
they
sir.
They do have some. They do have some, you know, that are out there that's on, you know, to me, you know, something somewhat of what it was. But it's no more artist development. It's no more Barry Gordy's and things of that nature. But I just, you know, I just had to come on once Brother Warren told me about what the subject matter was going to be, because that's exactly what I'm doing. I took a hiatus from my
yes,
career for the Gap Band, my Gap Band tenure, to raise my children, because I said there was no earthly man that was going to have more of an influence on my children than me. And I told both Charlie and Uncle Ronnie and Robert that I was going to have to do that, because my dad was there for me and I got to be there for them, because I just don't want the legacy to get interrupted with a diluting of influence of male presence and female presence.
Yes, sir.
Not to say anything about it. Yeah, that's what I'm thankful to be here. I appreciate you guys allowing me to
thank
speak.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sir. Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Me,
and you know what? Go ahead. I was going to let him know that I can bring him back on, and he can make some other comments as well. But go ahead, Brother Juan.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick note. I invited Dorian to come on because of his deep involvement in R&B with the likes of Charlie Wilson. But I would like to just note that I worked closely with Dorian throughout his career after he left Charlie Wilson, and he always, whatever he did, whenever he released music or performed or whatever, he always incorporated a component of community service with his activities. And that's part of the reason I brought him on, because he always gave to charities, created events around charitable causes in connection with his career. So I really wanted to highlight that on him and the work he had done and continues to do.
Well, thank you so much, Brother Warren and Mr. Paul. And I will, if you'd like to say some comments as we get into this conversation, I would definitely love and, you know, let Brother Warren know, and I can open your mic back up or, you know, if that's fine. Yes, sir. Thank you. So, you know what, I want to put it back out there again, because I was reading a book by the name, it's called I'll Take You There, and it's on the life of the Staples Singers and the March Up Freedom's Highway, and it's by an author by the name of Greg Cott. And it was really interesting because, you know, the Staples Singers, we know that they were really, we knew them, we heard of them, but again, they were one of those groups that were really influential in Martin Luther King's movement, I think, and some of the rights movements. I mean, songs like Respect Yourself, you know, but I think it was really interesting because in the book it talks about Chicago. And one of the, you know, one of the foundational places where you had people like Curtis Mayfield, Jerry Butler, Sam Cooke, Lou Rawls, all these people lived in the same neighborhood, y'all, like Mahalia Jackson, you know, and then they talked about the populations of people coming from the South. And so the movement of black people struggling coming out of the South, this is what some of this foundational music was based upon. And the people had a real, like, obligation, they felt like, to uplift the community and serve the community. So, and I just want to throw it out there, brothers. You know, in his book, he pointed out how there was this network of Southside labels and clubs and newspapers and barbershops and banks and black businesses. And I just have to say, you know, with the Nation of Islam, this was in the 50s. And, you know, we know that the influence of the Nation of Islam was in the community. So, you know, I want to go back to you all and ask you all, do you want to add anything about the history of these social movements, black struggle, slavery, and any messaging that you all remember, you know, then we can come into what needs to be done today.
You know, sister, you know, we're taught, right, that those who sign the checks really control the activity, right? That whereas we had a whole bunch of little black labels and black music executives and so forth, you know, the black artists weren't really getting paid. The black songwriters weren't really getting paid. You know, back then we had a very small understanding of music publishing and so forth. So the black artists would do a song, they would sign over their masters to the white executives or the labels, and they would collect all the money, right? And so you saw a movement, but attached to that movement, there was no financial activity to it, right? And so, you know, you look at what was happening back then, and you look at what's going on right now. You know, there's no more black departments of music labels. There's no more black departments. Whereas you had a black department in Sony, a black department here, a black department there. All black music now is basically run by a white person in charge of the albums that come out, the projects that's being worked on, the artists that are being signed. And that's been the nature of the music business, I would say, for the last 15, 20 years. That's what it has delved into. You know, black people, especially those who've been around music for years, I've always told, and I've read this in a book a long, long time ago, it's one thing to understand the music business. It's another thing to understand the business of music. And that's where we lack. We lack in understanding the business of music. And we've been burnt in the past, and we're still getting burnt because we're hiring people who don't have our best interests at heart. Those of us who are going into the music industry are not researching and looking to see what's needed to be done. You know, to do conscious music today, you know, anybody can do conscious music today, but there's that tug of war between, do I want the money or do I want to be conscious? And to tell you the truth, today with the way things are set up, you can be both. You can be both, you know, with social media and the independent labels and the streaming services. You can put out your music independently without having to go to a major label. And if you're good, because, of course, talent is what drives this, right? First, you got to be good. You got to have more than desire. You have to be good. And if you're really good and you have this, then you can really put out whatever you want to. And the people will always, always react to good music. You know, but it's a mindset. It's a mindset that so many of us are married into believing that we have to work, that we have to be a part of these major organizations, which do not have our people or any kind of social movement in their best interest. They couldn't give a hell about us or our people. Anybody who shows that kind of inkling, you will never hear them. They will never put them out, and you will never hear them on the radio or through these streaming services. So it's a paradigm that has shifted. It's a question of, are we shifting with it?
Great point. Yeah, great point. Brother Warren, did you want to add something to that?
Yes, ma'am. I do. And, you know, Brother Colin and I come from, we're in the same industry, but like in two different worlds of it, ends of it. Being in New York or L.A., those were the centers where the record labels existed. So early in my career, and I took note quickly that everyone who was famous from Houston had left and gone to either New York or Los Angeles. The Laws family, Ronnie Laws, the Cubitt Laws, you know, Johnny Guitar Watts, all these artists were leaving to go and find their career. And one of the things I was really interested in was to help to build an industry in the South, in Houston. And in the beginning, I did what everybody else did. I would get the cassette tapes, and I'd get, you know, the demo tapes and fly to New York or fly to L.A. and try to meet with some radio executives or record company executives to try to get deals. Everything was centered around getting the deal. But they just weren't giving deals out to artists from the South. So
yes,
it was very frustrating. But what happened was, and I have to give credit to James Prince, Lil Jay, Jay Prince, Rap-A-Lot Records. He was a pioneer in initiating a movement of independence right here in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage everyone to get his book. It's called The Art and Science of Respect. It's a memoir by James Prince, and he details a lot of his struggles and efforts to break through the barrier in both record labels and radio, because radio didn't play local artists. And he had to fight a vigorous fight to get his artists played on the radio and to establish his label as an independent label. And the Ghetto Boys are iconic, partly for that reason. They were contemporaries with N.W.A., but their discography and career dwarfs that of N.W.A. And I would argue they were much more influential than N.W.A. because they were part of an independent movement rather than being signed to a label. I had the good fortune of being counsel for Rap-A-Lot Records for about 6 years. And before that, I was involved in helping to form independent labels throughout Houston that launched the careers of people like DJ Screw, which created a whole genre of music, Pimp C and Bun B. I did their first deal to launch their career, and Bun B just performed at the rodeo before 73,000 people, more people than was at the Super Bowl.
Wow, okay.
So that was something that organically came about in Houston, being out of the orbit of major record labels from New York and California. So the independence movement took root here in the Houston and South. And J. Prince and Rap-A-Lot became a template and a model for people like Master P, who in turn became a model and a mentor to people like Cash Money. And then there was Luke out of Florida. So this whole in the South, a whole independence movement was launched. And I can let Colin talk about whether that was similar in the North or not. I don't know. But I just want to kind of shine a light on the independence movement of music that took place in the South and was spearheaded to a great degree by Mr. Prince and Rap-A-Lot Records right here in Houston.
Yes, sir. Beautiful. Now, I have a surprise tonight. There is a young lady that's going to come on in a minute. I'm going to open up her mic because I want to quote again from Closing the Gap, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's. We know that those are inner visions, inner views of the heart, mind, and soul of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and this was conducted by Brother Jibril Muhammad. And one of the things he said is that there's intelligence there that must be fed. And this is really in response to the question, fun is what again? And Minister Farrakhan starts off by saying, fun is developing the creative mind that is seen in the sperm that has intelligence to seek the egg. And so he talks about the intelligence, and he also talks about what is fun. And he said, fun is us watching intelligence develop. Fun is feeding intelligence to create the creative mind that the child will be able to say like God be, and it is. That's fun. And so I'm using that to say that when we go back in history to some of these artists who were really feeding our minds and feeding our creativity, because there's the conversation going on right now, based on what the minister said as well, is the music really resurrecting the people? And so this sister, let me go ahead and open her mic. We have Sister Takiya Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am. How
yes,
are you?
Yes, ma'am. I am fine. Thank Allah, by Allah's grace
That's
and
right.
mercy. Yes, ma'am.
That's
and
right.
I want to introduce the audience to Sister Takiya because she is the daughter of our sister Sarita Wright, who is now deceased. But everyone knows who Sarita Wright is. She was such a beautiful writer, songwriter, poetry, lyricist, singer. Sister Sarita was actually in the Motown label, I believe, but she also was married to our brother Stevie Wonder, where we know her for singing. I know her for singing You Are the Sunshine of My Life, and, she is a beautiful soprano who sings so beautiful like an angel. And everybody knows that she is also in The Nation. She sang with people like, Billy Paul and
Billy Preston.
Billy Preston, right, and that was that song Born Again with the beautiful lyrics.
Yeah.
So I brought this to Takiya. She was so gracious to come and join us tonight, and she said she would share with us some of what her mom as an artist did to make impacts on social movements, spiritual movements, and any other personal convictions she wanted to share by her mom. Sister Takiya. And herself,
I just want to thank all the people who are involved with Elevated Places, you, Sister Pamela, Sister Tishni as well, for inviting me here on this segment tonight. It's a true honor to be a part of this. I am one of the children of Sister Sarita Wright Muhammad. Don't forget that, Muhammad.
Yes, ma'am. I apologize.
Oh, it's okay. I'm just teasing. But Sister Sarita Wright, yes, Muhammad, because she truly was striving to represent that last name and not just wear it, Muhammad.
That's right.
Even
That's
before
right.
she was, quote-unquote, a part of the Nation of Islam, because she always carried herself as a Muslim, and she just didn't know who she was yet. She was a part of an industry but wasn't of it. She always felt the pain of our people and was such a big influence for Stevie in regarding to the music and things and the consciousness and making him aware of things that were going on to where he felt. And I think that's where their relationship became strong, because he couldn't see, but he could feel. So
wow.
The things that she was able to see and articulate to him, she was helped him to under. They were able to meet on the same wave because she was able to see it and feel it, and he could feel the things that she was seeing. So they were able to intertwine. To this day, that's one of his best friends. He always tells me that's his best friend.
Beautiful.
You know, he's still affected by it to this day. However, I wanted to tap into something that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and I pray that Master Fahd Muhammad guides my words, and my words are spoken in his name and not of my own. But the minister has been speaking about divine hands. And those of you who may not know, divine hands was a sign language group that my mother, Sister Sarita, created. There was a point in the nation where we didn't have arts like that. There was no singers, there was no rappers trying to come out. It was either you were trying to rap or sing and you were trying to get a deal and just do whatever the world said, or you just didn't do anything at all. And my mother created Divine Hands. So the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan created a position that now exists around the nation entitled Cultural Refinement. That title started in Los Angeles, where the title was given to my mother. And Divine Hands was a spiritual group. We performed for Savior's Days. We performed for, opened up for Kirk Franklin and God's Property. We performed across the nation. I will recall this one time I remember performing for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in his home in Phoenix, and he wasn't feeling well. And he said he stepped out just to watch us and was peeking through and wasn't all the way inside, and said that our performance helped to heal him. And what that, for us, that was what our mother was teaching. Our mother was teaching us
wow.
how to connect
Beautiful.
With God and through a performance. The reason why she's so effective to this day, while we still get multiple emails and of people around the world saying they were named after her and the significance of her and all these things in their lives, from generation people younger than me telling me stories about they've heard from their grandparents and their great-grandparents, were because of the fact that she put God in the midst of her music. She put him first, even before she even truly knew who he was, who he is, who is Master Fahd behind.
Ma'am.
She did that then. And that's the example that we have through music like Black Maybe. That's a song that Kanye West actually sampled on one of his, it wasn't a song for himself, but he did it for the rapper Common. He made a beat for him and sampled our mother on that song. And it was music like that, and she has countless amount of songs. If you listen to her, the lyrics in her song, you can hear the pain that she feels for her people through the music that she was a part of writing. And there's a song called Someday Everything Is Gonna Be Okay. The light of joy will shine forever. It's like she was speaking about the hereafter and not even understanding what she was even Maybe she did. I don't know. I can't speak for her. Maybe she did know. But her that was very important for her, was to be a representation of her people and the enlightenment of her people through her music. And one of the things she's known for is she's known for not taking off her clothes. She's known for not having to sing a bunch of lustrous music. She's known for not being very well respected behind the scenes and not just in front of the scene. She's known not for playing a role, but for living a lifestyle. And that's the example that I have had, and that many people have had in the nation. I've been told many of times that, you know, there's a sister named Sister Nilam who's from Los Angeles, who also is a musician, and her husband is Brother Marquise, who was in a group
that my mom helped to give vocal lessons to and, you know, guidance when they first were starting. And they always remind me, there would be no Lilam if it wasn't for Sister Sarita starting cultural refinement and creating divine hands, because there was no outlet, because we need to be able to show people what, not just what they can't do, but what they're capable of doing. And that's one of the things that my mother, Sister Sarita, was able to do. And I am the middle child of four children that she had. She had my oldest brother, Brother Jamal, who is in Arizona. He is a pilot, a captain. Let me be correct, a captain pilot.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Pilot. And he's also the captain actually out in the Phoenix Mosque. I have my brother Hadari out in Detroit, who is a martial arts instructor, and he owns a real estate company. He deals with homes and reconstructing homes. And then I have my sister Harmony, who is the Vanguard POC in LA, and she's also a designer, and she's going to school to be a neurosurgeon. She's a baby, but she's not a baby. And I'm the middle child.
Beautiful.
I'm the middle children, Sister Takia, and I am a singer-songwriter myself. And I reside in Detroit. But if there's any questions that want to be asked, I am willing and if I'm capable to answering any questions as well.
Okay, beautiful. Praises be to Allah. Thank you so much for your words, Sister. Brother Warren, Brother Colin, did you have anything you wanted to ask the sister or make any comments?
I didn't want to say I'm so pleased that Sister came on because her mother and Stevie made some of the most beautiful music I never heard. So just
Oh, wow. All praises be to Allah. Thank you for that, man. Thank you for that
so
admiration for sure.
Yes,
sir.
Beautiful, beautiful. I know I was saying to you earlier how I love Superwoman and how Stevie Wonder was 21, I believe, at the time. And so potentially your mom's influence with that beautiful music. This is so beautiful, sis. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah,
so thank you.
I definitely believe so. I definitely believe that. I mean, he's said it before on multiple occasions about how the effectiveness of our mother with his music and his understanding. He began to have a relationship with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan because of our mother. So just being close to the God like that, how can you not be conscious? You almost have to be.
Definitely
an honor to have the mother we have. Yes, ma'am. And I wanted to thank you once again for allowing me this opportunity to keep my mother's name alive and to keep it flowing through the ears of the world.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, sister. As Brother Warren said, it's such an honor and a pleasure. And as you're talking, it makes me think of the woman and the divine value of the woman and you know, her essence. And we see that God, you know, in our sister, Sarita Muhammad. So thank you.
Funny. No, can I just say this? That just really just tripped me out because in the midst of talking, I wasn't sure how this was going to go, if there was going to be some type of conversation, commentary, or what exactly was going to be. So that's literally what I was just reading right before I got on the phone call. I was literally just reading that and the how we are made in the image of God. So when we what makes us act other than ourselves, and him breaking down the essence of us, and then some places say essence, and that was so right on time, and it was so reassuring to myself. So that was beautiful. Praise be to Allah, because
all praises are due to Allah. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
So, you know, one of the conversations we were talking about as well was we were looking at some of the older business models. Like I told you, I was reading this book about Staples, Singers, and the Pop Staples. And, you know, it talks about black business, black empowerment, family values, social consciousness. And one of the things they said about him as a businessman was that he was for his kids, right? They would say, you know, they knew when he was in there negotiating whatever had to be done, you know, he'd be right in the middle fighting for his children. And I think that mixture of your family, you know, our family, the artist family, Brother Colin, you were making some comments about, you know, how artists are sometimes, you know, locked into these contracts where it's just them. It's not about the betterment of maybe the whole person. It's just that artist they want. And, you know, again, is it really helping the black community? So, yeah, I want to get back to that conversation as well. So, sis, you're welcome to stay on if you like.
Oh, yes. This was just right up my alley.
Yes. Brother Colin, did you want to Yes, ma'am.
Yes,
ma'am.
You know, I was listening to Sister speak about her mother. You know, I'm a major Stevie Wonder fan. I've been a Stevie Wonder fan since I can remember, right? So
that's right.
Or anybody who's a Stevie Wonder fan knows who her mother is. You know who Sister Sarita is. And she says, you know, she is thankful for the opportunity for keeping her mother's name or her legacy alive. And sis, I want you to know her legacy hasn't gone anywhere, because those who know music and understand the history of our music know exactly who she is and her contributions. You know, the problem is, and it always has been, is that black people don't know our own history. So we don't know the history of our music. We don't know the history of Sarita Wright and what she did with Sister Sarita Muhammad. Let me make that correction. And her contributions and all of those, you know, Gambling Huff, all of those are Philly International, the Motown, all these people. We don't know the history. But you know who knows that history? White people know that history. They study our history. You can find 100 white people that know Sarita Wright's history and every song she did. And so we wonder why there's a disconnect in our success and in the social movement, because there's no continuity when it comes to us and our history. So we say we're in the music industry, but we're not students of the history, right? We say that we want to be in the music industry. We want to be this. We want to be that. But we don't know our history. If you don't know your history and all the obstacles you have to overcome to get to a certain point, you're bound to be Peter. And so, your mother's legacy is alive and well. It's just that we have to make it more alive and well within our own community. Because, trust me, people know exactly who your mother are. They just don't look like
her. Yes.
That's all.
Yes, sir. All praises due to Allah. Do you mind if I reply?
No, go ahead.
Go
ahead. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. No, I 100% agree with that. That's via design as well. There's a lot of our great artists are considered underground, if you notice. They'll consider someone who, Brandy, I don't know if anyone knows who Brandy is, considered an underground artist. However, her vocal ability from everyone behind the scenes, all the record labels, everyone says, can you give me that Brandy sound? Can you give me that? That's an example of someone, people who are great, a lot of times they don't allow them unless they can be controlled. If you're allowed to be a great artist, that means these labels are capable of controlling you. If you look at our history in regards to just artifacts and things, none of those things are in the U.S. These are things that are in Europe. They're not here. So it's the same. They approach it the exact same way in regards to music. They cover up who we are with these white artists mainly, and not realizing they've stolen these sounds from us. But, you know, there's, 6 degrees of separation? If you go back every time, 6 years back, you can always relate, go back to us in regards to music. But like the minister said, and the messenger said, we don't read. We don't pick up a book. We don't go study. But now we have phones, so you don't even have to read 10,000 books anymore to do so. All you got to do is, so we have to be willing as well to put out the information. If we have the information, we have to be willing to promote it, because there's too many different outlets that we have and that we are capable of utilizing in order to get our people information and give them positive thinking and positive information in regards to music and to where to go look for it. All it takes is one. It starts with one, and then the ripple effect will happen eventually. You know, but when something's good, it's good. It just is what it is. And I have been blessed, and I do agree. My mother's music is definitely not, and her art and her person is not dead at all. I get approached a lot in regards to, often I would say, in regards to our mother. However, I definitely think that part of the reason why she may not be a Whitney Houston is she just wasn't, not to say Whitney, nothing wrong with Whitney Houston, but she just wasn't willing to go a certain mile in regard to the her career as an artist. She wasn't willing to put on the miniskirt and do certain stuff. She didn't want to talk about all night long. See, there were just certain things that there was a level of respect she's always had for herself, and that's what the sister was speaking to. We, especially in regards to women in this industry, we have to get back to a place where we're self-respecting, because a nation cannot rise any higher than this woman. So until we look into the mirror and self-reflect and we decide to rise up into the thinking of God, because we were made in his essence and his image, and we connect and we become one with him, then the music is everything. Everything else is going to continue to fail, but we're slowly rising. We're better than we were yesterday, and we just got to keep on with a good fight. But yes, sir, I definitely agree.
Yes. Okay.
Mr. Brown.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. And I'm going to take a caller. Go ahead, Brother Warren.
Okay. Yes, and I'll try to be brief, but I just wanted to say that what we have to always be aware of is that we are at war. There's a war going on for the hearts and the minds. And Professor Griff has a book, The Psychological Covert War on Hip Hop. I only read, it's so dense I couldn't read all of it. But I'd like you to read two excerpts from it, if I may. It says, to control and produce uniformity among the masses, the United States government disseminates propaganda domestically among its own citizens. The main sources that it uses to spread its propaganda are the press, the cinema, education, and the radio. And then another statement that Chuck D said, he said, it's easy for corporate financial powers that be to say that hip-hop is the biggest music today, when it actually isn't. It's propaganda. And actually, there has been a grassroots initiative against its negativity for years. This is obscured by the fact of popular culture fabricating numbers with little meaning. And I thought about that because our sister just alluded to the fact that there's this underground movement of artists who are really talented, but it's the public relations arm of the government and of the corporate structures that would try to convince us that this mess that we hear over the radio is the music of the day. And they'll do a big show on the Grammys and give awards to people walking around, you know, virtually naked, to make us think that that is the popular art form of the culture. When I look at my youngest son and young, they listen to artists that you don't ever hear on the radio. But we're bombarded with this propaganda.
Right.
See, I don't want to get long-winded on that point. I just wanted to get that out.
That's right.
No, that's really true. And, you know, real fast, it reminds me, going back to the quote from the minister in the Swan Song, when he talked about how if he sold those masters that he was offered $750,000 for, then perhaps it would have gotten put on the shelf and the information, the music wouldn't have even gotten to the people. And so that seems to be, you know, like Brother Collins saying, some of those big advances that they give these artists, and then they're kind of locked in, and perhaps some of what they could get out, they can't get out because they're locked into contracts. So, you know, you like you say, Chris, we got to get this information out about who's good and push their music. And real fast, because I just want to say this. So, you know, there's this thing about Gamble and Huff. And not only are we looking at Teddy Pendergrass and, you know, Wake Up Everybody, I just wanted to put it out there. They were also very instrumental, we know, with the OJs. And so when we talk about Ship Ahoy, I forget the name of the album, but the song is Ship Ahoy. And Brother Warren, you know, every time KTSU opens up, they open up with this song, Ship Ahoy. And then in an interview with Ed Gordon, Mr. Gamble, he told us that also on that album is For the Love of Money. And he said the reason why they both were on that album is because of slavery and the impact on money. So you had the one obvious slave, you know, song teaching the history, and then you had this other about For the Love of Money. So, you know, our artists, our brothers and sisters, like Sister Sarita Muhammad, Brother, you know, Gamble, many of them were just so talented, and we owe them so much. We got to get this information out. Let me go ahead and take these callers. Let's see, Sister Marguerite, assalamu alaikum. Yes, ma'am.
Well, alaikum salam. You all got my head spinning because I'm talking about something that's close to my heart because I've lived in Los Angeles for many years, and I was working on a singing career. And that was at the time, you know, Stevie Wonder was my heart. You know, and he owned the radio station, KJLH, Sister Takia, is that the name
yes,
of it?
Yes, ma'am, still does.
That was Donald Crenshaw. That was popping. You hear me? That was a station. But I remember, you know, meeting your mother and stuff like that because, you know, we were all, you know, singing and doing this. But I had an experience that turned me away from music. And a voice came to me, believe it or not, and told me, this is not the way to go. And all praises due to Allah. At the same time, I was coming into the nation. And I just never looked back. But I always kept my love of singing and singers. And I watched how your mother was. But I want to ask the brothers, have you seen the documentary on Netflix called The Two Killings of Sam Cooke? Now,
yes,
Sam Cooke, because, you know, I'm in my 60s. I'm not going to say lower or upper 60s, but I'm in my 60s. And I grew up in not far from where Sam Cooke was born and raised. And I did not know that he was a civil rights activist. And he was working to get a radio station for black people and I guess like Motown.
Yes, ma'am.
Going
yes,
for
ma'am.
Black people. And
okay.
And the thing about his death is the documentary, you know how they say if you want to get some information out, don't do a movie, do a documentary because it's harder for them to stop you when you do a documentary. But this documentary made it obvious that his manager had him killed, and the manager and the family to this day are collecting royalties off of what Sam Cooke did. His family has been in court for years, and they have been unsuccessful. But and it's
yes,
interesting that this white boy, whose father was his manager, using the money that he's making from Sam Cooke's royalties. And they did the movie One Night in Miami.
Ooh.
He put up the money for that. So there's a lot of history that and how important it is to teach your children. Now, my husband and I had children in our early 40s, and I'm like, what the heck? As time went on, I came to see Allah was blessing us, you know, at an age where we were starting to slow down. These children helped us kids put it into another gear. But at the same time, they grew up listening to us sing to Sam Cooke, sing to the OJs, sing to all this, and play. And since my husband was a DJ in another life, you know, he'd make all these CDs for them. And
yes,
he was, you know, got his new car, and he's riding around in his car. And his fellas are saying, why you got all this old music playing? And my son said, just sit back and relax. Just sit back and relax. And so now 20
yes,
years
ma'am.
Later, those same kids are listening to the same music. So music
That's
is
right.
very influential, and you have to take it into your own hands, each parent, to teach your children an appreciation and the history.
Yes, ma'am.
Praise
yes, ma'am. Thank you. Praise be to Allah. Thank you
yes.
so much, Sister Marguerite. Appreciate your call. And today they call it sampling, right, y'all? But that's another topic, too,
mm-hmm.
where the young sample the music of the past. I have Brother Louis Ali who has a comment. Brother Louis, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. I'm fairly enjoying the show. The sister, I didn't quite get her name, but I really enjoyed her comments, particularly about her mother and to
yes,
be
yes.
such a revolutionary
Sister
artist.
Sister Takiya.
Pardon? What was the name?
Her name's Sister Takiya.
Sister Takiya. May Allah forever be pleased with your mother and your family. I really enjoyed
okay.
your comments. I want to say something and maybe ask a little question. During slavery, music always revolutionary. And under segregation, we got a lot of music that was revolutionary. I want to know, what effect do you all believe integration has had on music, arts, and culture? Because it seems to me that our people are always, have been and always will be, thirsty and hungry for music and art. But it seems to me like today's art is what we would classify as black degeneracy, where you know people are very thirsty and you give them a full glass of water, but you put about 10 ounces of urine in it that makes it poison. So when they drink it, it's like they're poisoned. So my question is, what effect do you think integration has had on music, arts, and culture? And I'll listen. Really enjoying the show, Sister Pam.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you. Wa alaikum salam, Brother Louis, for calling. Okay. Anybody want to respond to that?
I can take a quick shot. I was just thinking about something, and I was going to run it by Brother Colin since he's there in New York concerning the consolidation of record labels and entertainment industries on the corporate level, which basically eliminated a lot of competition. And I think it feeds right into the question that was just asked concerning, you know, integration. I had the pleasure of meeting one of my I didn't say an idol, but a person I was a big fan of, Bobby Womack.
Mm.
And I was on a promotional tour with that was on the same record label with Bobby Womack, and we spent the entire day in Los Angeles going to different distributors, making stops and promotional stops. And I'll never forget Bobby Womack told us how they never expected to make money from their record deal. The record was put out and the label basically kept the money, but they used the record to fuel their live performance, and they toured. They called it the Chitlin' Circuit then. But they would, he said he did like 300 dates in a year. So he would perform at a place, load up everything into the station wagon and drive to the next town and, you know, get breakfast and take a nap and perform again that night and then keep going. But music was organic and it was tied to the community during that time because when they would go to those different towns, they couldn't stay in the the Rice Hotel in Houston. They had to stay in somebody's home or in something in a black neighborhood overnight and eat at the local black restaurant, you know, as they prepared to play the place as part of that quote-unquote children's circuit. So our music, this is my opinion, our music belonged to us then. But through the immigration and the mergers and acquisitions of record labels and with the digitization of music in terms of now you didn't have to keep music on these tapes, it could be digitized, it killed the music industry from selling records and CDs to now it's streaming, and only the artists that in Colin, please correct me because I'm not as recent in this as probably you are, but my understanding is only the artists with a massive amount of followers can really make any money through the streaming process because they just aren't buying CDs, people not buying CDs and what have you. So now they're not selling music as much as they're selling a lifestyle of the artist. And that's why these artists do all the outlandish things that we see so that they could be publicized and marketed and people are feeding into the artists themselves even more than they are to the music. So that's just an observation that I, you know, that I wanted to make.
Okay. Praise be to God.
Can I attempt to answer?
Go right ahead. Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
That was a very valid point, Brother Nate, and a great question. What came to my mind first was our lesson, hard trials are necessary to establish truth. That just kept on ringing in my head. And how that related in regards to music, because within integration, and I pray that I'm answering this brother's question correctly and I'm understanding it. When the minister spoke at one time in regards to our academic levels. When we were separate in the class, we excelled. When we put them in the class, we started to think less of ourselves because we went back to that mentality that they gave us during slavery was that they're better and that we're less. So we began to not speak up. We began to not speak out. And then also we began to learn their history more instead of knowing ours. So in regards to when we integration happened, hard trials being necessary to establish truth. The truth was us. When we were going, we had hard trials. Slavery was a hard trial for us. There were certain things that were hard trials for us before that we were fighting for something. So when we sang, when we rapped, when we spoke poetry, when we got up and did anything in that nature and in the form of arts, when we danced, we did it from a place of the soul of finding the truth that was within us. But once we started, once we integrated in my thinking and my understanding on the way that I see it, that we began the hard trials and different things, we still were establishing truth, but about somebody else. We were looking at somebody else trying to be someone else. So, yes, we may be still having hard trials and things of that nature, but now a lot of us are looking to be like someone else instead of accepting our own and being ourselves. And that's basically all that I had to say, that what kind of resonated in my soul in regard to that, and hopefully that helped in some way.
Oh, that's beautiful, beautiful. Yes, ma'am. Brother Colin, did you want to chime
in on that? Ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Brother Warren brings up some points, but I'm going to just bring it from a different perspective, right? I believe the digitization of music works in the favor of the smaller artists, the independent artists. And why do I say that, right? To be an artist signed to a major label, you know, there's so many departments. There's promotion, there's marketing, there's sales. All of us take a bite out of the money of the album sale, right? Then there's they're recouping the cost of the album and so forth. And then you have to sell X amount of records in order to see a dollar. Oftentimes, depending on how big the budget of the album is, you would have to go almost platinum before you sold $1, right? But with the digitization of music and the advent of social media, anybody that has a social media following can make a song and post it on YouTube and post it on Instagram and all these different places, and you get a million followers on YouTube. No, the money is not going to be great for the digital stream of the music. You're right about that. It's very low. And I think YouTube might be the worst, right? It's very low. However, what you're doing is, as Brother said earlier in the show, the brother who was the guest that you know, Brother Warren, there is no more A&R, which is artist and repertoire, which is the development of artists. They see a young artist or any good artist, and they think they could develop them. They no longer have that, right? You have to come ready. You know, you have to be an artist already developed. So what they look for now is they look at your social media presence. So do they have a following? How many videos do they have? And when they see that you have that, then labels are ready to work with you. But because of the fact that we have the digitization, you don't really have to sign with a major label anymore. You can go out there and do an independent type situation where you put out your own music. And once again, like mm-hmm. I said, if you're good, you're going to sell. You know, you don't mm-hmm. have, you don't need a third party. Master P, Jay Prince, but I'm really going to go Master P. Jay Prince sets the foundation, no doubt about that. Right? Mm-hmm. That brother deserves all the credit in the world. But Master selling cassettes out of the trunk of his car, saying, I don't need the middleman. I can earn the whole dollar and not a part of the dollar. Well, that's what's going on right now. Well, you can go independent, say, not to put my music on Spotify. I can get it on Apple Music. I can get it on Tidal. I can get it on this. I can get it on that. You don't need a major label that's going to take 40-50% of what you should be earning. So, yes, there's a downside to it, but there's also a side that if you're willing to go out there and take the mindset, I'm going to do for myself and promote my own brand and push my own music, you can be very successful in this industry.
Yes, sir. I wanted to add, if I could, go right ahead, Brother Warren, then I want to say something.
And I'll be brief because I concur with Brother Colin that this really is a time when we can strike for our freedom and independence mm-hmm. because of the technology that's available. There's a brother here in Houston, Brother Colin, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but his name is Kay Leno.
Yeah.
He's never had a record deal. But he has released 50 albums over a 40-year period, 50 albums independently, and have a huge following. And he's touring in the States, all in Europe and everywhere, doing exactly what you talked about, using the independent vehicle and the social media and his fan base. And Sister Pam's probably familiar with him. He has, I mean, his album is just the teachings from cover to cover, you know.
That's right.
But I just wanted
to, very.
Wanted to give an ode to, you know, Kayrino for the work that he's done in doing.
Definitely.
What you're
beautiful brother. Beautiful brother. He's always in the community, uplifting, you know, volunteering as well, Brother Kayrino. You know, but I wanted to also say, I kind of, you know, I was listening to also what our sister said, and I kind of agree with what she's saying in the sense that after integration, our children lost the knowledge of some of the oppression, some of the struggle. It got rewritten, you know, it got suppressed because ultimately music sometimes is about telling stories. And so those stories aren't being told because if the people don't know that they're being oppressed, and it goes back to what the minister's saying, I just wanted to say that. When he says that he did songs of the cause that bring about resurrection, and so now we're at a point where because of integration, a lot of our people don't even know the nature of the beast that we're dealing with, like the people used to know when we lived in segregated cities, had just escaped the South, you know, from all that terrorism and knew exactly who the white man, they knew that the white man in the establishment was the enemy. So, you know, the youth aren't, a lot of times people aren't talking about it because of what you all say, I agree, being suppressed in these contracts, but also they need to be taught the knowledge. We all do. So
I think that's a beautiful thing. But it talks about how integration brainwashed our people. So
look at what, you know, our lessons say. Our lessons say, why, in lesson number one, why does the devil keep our people apart from his social equality? Answer, because he does not want us to know how filthy he is in all of his affairs. Now that we're integrated, look at what's going on. We now are apart and submerged and taking baths and bathing in all of his filthiness and becoming of who he is. We're living in his truth and not our truth anymore.
Yes, ma'am. Beautiful, beautiful. So, brothers, you know, this has been an awesome conversation. I know we're coming down to our last part of this conversation. Did anyone want to add anything that we haven't talked about? You know, again, the final call in the February 1st, 2022, it talked about Brother Akbar Muhammad and gave him an award because he was in Africa, where he was instilled with some award or distinguishment. And it says in this article that Mr. Muhammad is credited with opening the door of Africa for the group Public Enemy. You know, and this is, again, going to the impact. He Black Moses himself, Brother Akbar, opened up the door of Africa, introducing people like Dionne Warwick, Jermaine Jackson, and you know, some of the conscious music, the message people who are part of our movement. So I think this is just so imperative that we really look at this issue and push it where we can. So we're in closing. Did anyone want to talk about any initiatives that they feel that they've been a part of or that they've been seeing done that will help our people you know, get better music and influence the resurrection of our people as entertainers, as lawyers? Does anyone have anything they want to add?
As a musician, support what you like. These artists wouldn't be as big as they are if we don't listen to them, if we don't support them, if we don't buy their merchandise, if we want to see these other artists be successful, support them. Simple as that.
Yes, ma'am. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you, sis. And Brother Warren, I have to laugh because you mentioned to me about Curtis Mayfield. We were talking about him, and you said he was a guitarist. Like, you like to play the guitar. Because that's the beautiful thing about both these brothers' audience. They're both artists, and they love, and Brother Colin does piano, Brother Warren does guitar. But, you know, as soon as you said that, I put on something, and all I could hear was guitar playing. I was like, okay, that's a guitar. You know, but my point is also the musicianship, and especially how the minister, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, has pushed, you know, the appreciation of symphonic music, the arts. You know, we really have to push this in our community to our young people, the love and appreciation of music and art.
May I close with one thing that hasn't been talked about?
Go right ahead, yes, sir.
I would just like for us to recognize the genius of our younger generations that created and came up with hip-hop. At first, I didn't understand it. I just thought it was noise until I had some hip-hop producers. I watched them work, and they explained to me how they took samples and didn't just loop them, but they would modulate them, change the frequencies, mm-hmm. chop them up, reorganize them. And those were young people who came in an era where music had been taken out of the schools. There were no choirs in the schools. There were no, you know, piano lessons or horn lessons in the schools. And they took technology that had been made for one purpose, and they created an entire art form from it. So I always like to give homage to the genius of our younger generations that produced what we know as hip hop.
Can I say something to that? I mean, Brother Warren is not that old. You know, hip hop was created when I was in high school. Hip hop as we know today 75, 76, 77. Well, the woman
right.
wasn't that old. We're talking about the younger generation.
Right.
I'm thinking,
that's right.
You weren't that much older, brother.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
well,
right.
I'm knocking on 70, brother.
Yeah. And as I said, hip-hop ushered
me in
the
York.
Door.
I was in New York in 73 in a club, and I heard these people interrupting the music. I wanted to listen to the song, and they kept interrupting it with this guy talking over it and scratching over it, and I didn't realize that until later I was listening to, like, the birth of hip-hop, which had just left the park and was coming into the clubs in New York. So
that's right. Beautiful. That is so beautiful. Coming out of New York, and I believe, isn't it true, Brother Colin, that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, you know, had great influence on some of the knowledge, and we know through brothers such as Brother Khaled, I think he was on Ice Cube's CD, and others, who else influenced? So much influence from the nation you heard in hip-hop. The teachings and the conscious and the resurrection of our people. I remember the first time I heard It's Like a Jungle out there, you know, makes me wonder how it keeps them going under. So, yeah, this is beautiful. That's a whole nother show, Brother Warren. That's what it is.
Yep.
It's a beautiful conversation. Yes, sir. Well, please, in closing, Brother Warren, let the audience know how they can get in contact with you, you as well, Brother Colin, and Sister Takiya. If you have any information you'd like to give us, please feel free. We really appreciate you coming on the show, ma'am. It's such a blessing. Brother Warren?
Okay, I can be reached best by email at warren@wfmlawfirm.com. It's warren@wfmlawfirm.com. I invite you all to email me if you have a question, a comment, concern. Look forward to hearing from you.
Yes, sir. Brother Colin, how can we reach you?
How can we reach that email? CP Medina, which is MEDINAH at me.com.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. And yes, ma'am, is there anything you want to share with us, how you could be reached or a project you're doing you want us to know about?
Yes, ma'am. I'm actually working on a book entitled How It Changed My Life, and it will be incorporated with an album that I'll be doing with it, and it'll be redoing some of my mother's music. But I also can be found and reached on Instagram and Facebook. I go by the name No GMO. It's No GMO _ music, and you can ask questions. You can reach me to hire me for any type of songwriting or singing there. And I just once again appreciate for all the questions and all the support and love for our family. Appreciate you again, Sister Pamela. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am. Praises be to Allah. And you can reach us or reach me at A Time for Justice at PamLegal2000@gmail.com. And so I would like to thank you all for listening to the Elevated Places Network presents A Time for Justice. I would like to thank my producer, Sister Samaya Muhammad, and I would definitely like to thank our sister, Dr. Ava Muhammad, and the Elevated Places Network team, that's Sister Rona Muhammad, Sister Donna Muhammad, Brother Terrence Muhammad. And we invite you to visit our website. I also invite you all to listen to Sister Ava's show, and that's Ask Dr. Ava. That comes on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's Ask Dr. Ava on the Elevated Places Network. So thank you once again for listening, and tune in next week for more informative discussions. Thank you again. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Alaikum salam.